Hello again, everybody. Welcome back to the D1 Baseball Podcast. I'm Aaron Fitt alongside Kendall Rogers and Super Bowl MVP Mike Rooney. Gentlemen, always a pleasure. How are we doing this morning?
I'm disappointed you're not wearing a pewter or what. I don't know if they call it red. What's the little hue they call their color?
Well, I mean, the old school creamsicle is the way to go. The creamsicle Buccaneers hat is in the mail. It's on the way. Has not arrived yet, but hopefully next week we'll be sporting that one for you. Go Bucks.
Fitzy, did you know when your Buccaneers were not going to have to contend with a Philadelphia Eagles team with plus toughness and plus charisma? Did you just know it was over at that point? Like, there was really only a team like the Eagles can keep Tom Brady from winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as I realized that the backup quarterback wasn't going to play for the Chiefs, I said, all right, we got this thing. I mean, as long as there's no Nick Foles walking through that door, we got this thing.
That's awesome.
Of course, you know, everyone knows this podcast is brought to you by our friends at Driveline Baseball. For college coaches, making updates to your player development system can be a difficult task. Whether limited by time, money, or resources, Driveline has put together solutions to help any and all as you try to move your program forward. By calling or emailing into Driveline's customer support, coaches can work with the experts on creating a custom player development bundle that will stretch their budgets as far as possible. Through the combination of gear, technology, and software, Driveline will work together with coaches to draw out the perfect roadmap for player development in any program. For more, check out Driveline Baseball on Twitter, Instagram, or at drivelinebaseball.com. We have got another collaboration with Driveline coming. A future episode of the podcast in the very near future. Feature those guys, some of the neat stuff that they're doing. So keep an ear open for that. Mr. Rooney, of course, you're our honorary MC. You know, I'm gonna hand it over to you for our coin toss here today. What do we got in store for us today?
Yeah, so I thought what we could do today, gentlemen, is one of my favorite parts of participating in the top 25 exercise was, because I had never done this before, you guys break out those teams into position groups. You know, you evaluate the offense, the starting pitching, the bullpen, etc. I'd never done that specifically, and I thought it was a really powerful exercise as far as, you know, confirming convictions about a team or maybe even backing off original opinions on a team. And so what I thought we could do for part one, or for the first half of this podcast, is we have 10. So we grade the teams on the 20 to 80 scale in those position groups. And we had 10 position groups that were 70 grade groups. So that was the highest grade that we might've given out 175, but I'll include that in this group. But that was the highest grades that we gave out. And I thought, man, we should talk about those groups, because those groups are real separators for these clubs. And so we did. We split those up. So we'll do that. And then the other thing is, what's top of mind for me right now is some of our Omaha hunches. Now, you can't pick the top eight in our rankings, because obviously those are, you know, those aren't Omaha hunches. Like, those are, we're putting our flag on those logos. But I figured we'll each pick one Omaha hunch, and in these three categories: a team that is not in the top eight, they're below that; a team that is not in our top 16, because so now we're getting out of the super regional group; and then a team that just didn't make our top 25 altogether. So, you know, so we'll just throw out some Omaha hunches. We're getting close enough to the season that I think our brains are all starting to go there, you know. And to me, Omaha hunch is not the same as rankings. I mean, rankings is, to me, a lot of what we think is going to happen in the regular season. When I think about Omaha hunches, I just start thinking about throwing darts and teams that I just got a gut feeling on. So we'll play around with that. Fitzy, so you did a lot of the 70 grades. So let's have you kick it off, and we'll go you, then KR, then me. Give me your first 70 grade group.
Well, I think we got to start with the number one team in the country, and that's Florida. And they actually are the only team that I think the only team that had multiple number 70 grades. Mm-hmm. And of course they got three of them. Because I mean, you know, I said it, I think in the fall, I think that you can make a case they've got the best pitching staff in the country, and I think they might have the best offense in the country. I mean, I just think they're just crazy good. But I'm going to talk about the bullpen group, which we gave a 72, and you know, that's certainly, again, looking at a 70 grade, it's aggressive. But the thing is just the depth and the variety, and you know, the proven shut down guys. I mean, it's all there, you know. I mean, you have to assume you're going to see probably Mace, Leftwich, Barco, and Nick Pogue would be the four starters. And so, and you've got a group of guys who, like, maybe four more pitchers who could be starters if they needed them to be, but, you know, you could do kind of piggyback deals with these guys. If you wanted to throw Franco Alamán out there for four innings, you know, on a Friday, you know, or a Saturday, you could do that out of the bullpen. You could close with a different guy each night. I mean, you could go Alamán, who's of course the big JUCO transfer arm. I think one of the top JUCO transfer arms in the country this year, just a big old physical 6'6" horse, you know, with arm strength and some funk to him, some deception. He's got track record. He was at FIU. He was really a star in the Cape League. I didn't see the huge stuff this fall in my look, but he kind of got better as he went, which I thought was interesting, because the first inning or two I saw him, it was kind of like, this is not what I was expecting. And then he kind of finished stronger. It was 91, 94, and, you know, he's been up to six, and, you know, breaking ball was a little inconsistent, but you could see flashes of it in there. And so I think you're throwing him in that mix, along with, of course, Ben Specht, who kind of settled into that closer job last year and is just your, you know, he to me feels like that almost like a firmer version of Michael Byrne. You know, it's like the kind of the stocky, you know, kind of 6'1" right-hander that doesn't, you know, it's not like the Adonis type body that you're looking for from Florida, but it's just a guy that comes at you with pretty good stuff. I mean, you know, low 90s can touch 94, maybe even a 5 on the right day, but, you know, 3 pitches for strikes. You can stretch him out. He's not just a one inning guy. So he's a proven closer, but he also can give you multiple innings, which is a common theme with that group. And, you know, Christian Scott, again, I've seen him up to 96 before in the fall. He pitched for multiple innings and kind of held 93, and he missed bats with a slider and changeups there. Brandon Sproat's kind of your big arm, your wild card guy. We'll show you high 90s. Just needs to continue to refine the breaking ball. And, you know, and then from the left side, you got Jordan Butler, who I think would be a Saturday starter for a lot of teams, you know, in college baseball. And he's like your middle relief kind of swingman for this staff. It's just a, you know, a lefty that really competes, 3 pitch guy, you know. Trey Vanderweide had a lot of success in his career at USC Upstate. Kind of a totally different look from a lot of these guys. He's got some funk to him. He's not like the big power arm, but it's still up to 91. I mean, you know, and he's got a long track record. And then you throw in Timmy Manning, one of the top freshmen in the country, a left-hander who probably, you know, Sully thinks will be a Friday guy before too long over the course of his career. So right side, left side, guys that can, you know, they can lengthen, guys that can just come in and blow gas for an inning. I mean, it's whatever you need, it's all there.
It's insane. I think about Florida is, what are they not good at from a baseball program standpoint? And the answer is they're good at everything. They recruit as well as anybody. Yeah. The development is off the charts. You know, they have these guys that are just waiting in the weeds, and then they get their turn. It's like, oh, okay. So you had a Friday night guy who was pitching in your bullpen for 2 years. 'Cause that's what happens at Florida. So
I'm pretty sure incredible. When I talked to Sully in the fall, this is well before the fall report, but I'm pretty sure when I talked to Sully in the fall, he said they had 12 guys that were 95 or better.
Yeah, I think it's at least that.
That'll work.
That's crazy.
You know, yep.
The velocity plays, and that they certainly have a lot of it.
Yep. KR, what you take us to your first group. Who do you got?
Well, I guess we'll continue with the Gators, right? Because everything's yes. about Florida. You know, I think when you look at Florida's offense, you know, originally when we put the 70 grade on Florida on their offense, I was a little surprised. But, I mean, if you look at this unit overall – it's easy to see why we're so bullish on Florida's offense. When you look back at last year, you know, Jacob Young was off to a phenomenal start. I think he was hitting over 450 or something when the season ended. You know, he has the ability to hit to all fields. He's a really nice player. You know, Nathan Hickey was a guy going into last season, a freshman that we were all really excited about. He hit over 300. He's back. He can hit for power. You know, Chris Armstrong, you know, for the Gators is a guy who has big-time pop, 6'4", 230 frame. And then you look at, you know, the guys like Jeff Fabian, a 5-tool player who, you know, obviously everybody saw the highlights from, you know, their Fall World Series on ESPN+. He's got big-time power. He's got a lot of swag to go with it. So when you look at those guys and you kind of add in Kendrick Calalaos, who has experience, Kirby McMullen, you know, Colby Halter's a freshman they like a lot, you know, Josh Rivera. I mean, that's just a really deep lineup. And the thing I like about this Florida team, too, is when you – dig into the fall report, you dig into the notes on these guys, and you look at their survey and things like that, mean, they've got slashes next to a lot of these names, which means they've got a lot of depth too. So this is an offense that not only is going to be solid 1 through 9, you know, they can get guys off the bench too that can go in there and also produce if need be. In a year, as we've talked about in the past, guys, in a year where you might need somebody, you're probably going to need someone to come off the bench and kind of continue where the production left off. So Florida just has a really deep offense. You know, Aaron and I had the debate a while back about Florida versus Texas Tech, who's deeper offensively. If there's one team that is deeper than Texas Tech, it would be Florida, and that's just a star-studded lineup top to bottom.
Yeah, and you talked about the depth, and I think the biggest challenge they're going to face is trying to find at-bats for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you mentioned Callalau. I mean, he's been a starter for 2 years already. How do you keep him out of the lineup? But then, you know, Sally's like Sterling Thompson, and he's got to play. I mean, he's a true freshman with, like, incredible power and, you know, bazooka arm. Like, you got to find a place for that guy. And so, like, is it possible that Callalau, like, becomes a part-time player as a third?
I know, right?
That doesn't make sense. He's just, you know, Mr. Mature at bats. And, I mean, it's just, you know, everywhere you look, there's competition, you know, and this freshman class with those guys and Halter and, you know, Carrion and shortstop and Matt Cassetti, I think, can really hit. I mean, there's just, you know, they're 14, 15 guys deep comfortably that would be starters almost anywhere else.
Yeah, and even Jordan Butler, we mentioned him on the mound. I mean, he's also an asset from an offensive standpoint. He can hit for a little pop too. So that's yet another weapon for the Gators. It's as if the Gators need more weapons.
Yeah, I think the other thing on this, the Gators program, is that there, you know, there are some programs where you recruit prospects and you hope you can turn them into real players. Florida has this uncanny ability for they recruit really good, like, now players that are also prospects. And they kind of remind me of Kentucky basketball, where I picture going to a Kentucky basketball, you know, back in the last several years, not this year, but where their inner squad scrimmages probably look like a bunch of NBA players just going at it at each other's throats. There's a level of fire and competitiveness in the Florida program that, when sprinkled on top of this incredible talent, is why, you know, they go to Omaha what feels like every year.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I've taught, and Aaron could probably speak on this from going to their fall scrimmage, but, you know, from talking to scouts, it's been interesting over the years to see how many scouts talk about just how professional, you know, Florida's approach is at practice. You know, it looks like you're going to a pro practice. You know, there's not a lot of, from what they've told me, there's not a lot of cutting up and, you know, being silly and things like that. It's a very serious professional approach, and I think it shows on the field. One guy I was going to mention is Corey Acton. You know, if you guys remember back when he went to college, you know, that was a big deal. Like, they thought he was going to be an absolute stud. He's a guy who, you know, hit 250 his first year. I mean, he struggled like a first-year player usually does in the SEC, unless he's just very special. And then last year in the shortened season, it's kind of a bad litmus test on a short year. But, you know, he's hitting 192. I'm kind of curious to see what he does. You know, when you're talking about Corey Acton as potentially – I wouldn't even say the weak link, but, like, the guy with the least impressive numbers from last year as like, your one guy. Like, that's a really talented player that's just waiting to break out.
Yeah, he's going to have a big year. I thought he looked really good in the fall, and you can tell his approach has continued to mature. He does have real power. That's a good call, Kendall, and that's just kind of a forgotten man on this team.
But, I know, right?
You know, certainly a weapon as well. But, I mean, the thing that I always think about here is you know, to your point, Runes, they always get these – you know, really game ready guys immediately. Like, but, you know, when you think about Florida, of course, you're going to think about all the big arms and everything and all the, like, the, you know, the Josh Rivera type guys who just look like big leaguers right away. But, like, I think of just the polished Florida kids that play baseball 365 days a year growing up, you know, the Nolan Fontanas, the Dalton Guthries, Jonathan Indias, like these kids who just come in and they're just like, they're so advanced right away as freshmen. And so instinctive. That's how kind of Rivera, you know, he fits right in that mold, even though he's also, like, you're, you know, he's tooled up and he looks the part physically, but he's none of these guys are like long-term works and progress. I mean, they're always ready to go. And so, and Kendall, just piggyback on your point about how professional the program is, and then we can move on. You know, it struck me, like, in the fall when I was trying to figure out when I was going to come down there, Sully sends me a spreadsheet. This was, like, early in the fall, and it has, like, every day mapped out for the rest of the fall with, like, who's going to throw, how many innings, and, like, you know, here's the routine for that day, like, down to the minute. And it's just like, it's just a machine. I mean, it's just the way they run it. It's so different from the way so many programs are run, but obviously there's a lot to like about about that program. 70 grade, by the way, for the hitting tool and for the power tool. We break those two things up. Of course, hitting kind of encompasses on-base ability and, you know, yeah, hit for average and just kind of general offense, whereas power is pretty specific. So, but both of those get 70 grades for us, and I think that's fair.
Love it. All right. So we've done some Gator talk. Let me transition us to the ACC. I've got the Duke defense, and you know, one thing about the program Chris Pollard is putting together at Duke, you know, they've famously gone to two straight game three of super regionals, but they remind me of Stanford back in the day. They remind me of Vandy, where it's a very, and this is probably, you know, I'm kind of buying into stereotypes, but they just play a very intelligent brand of baseball, just a very solid brand of baseball. And it's a physical group. And, you know, the reason we're so high on the Duke defense this year is because right up the middle of the field, they are super impressive. You know, Michael Rothenberg is back at catcher. In a normal year, there's no way he's still in college baseball. Ethan Murray is back at shortstop. He's extremely short-handed and proven. And then Joey Loperfido is back in center field. In a normal year, he also is not back in college baseball. And oh, by the way, in the shortened 2020 season, they fielded 988. They made 7 errors in 16 games, which is insane. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's a million reasons why we're all excited about Duke and their program, but I think their defense really summarizes all that and puts a bow on it. They're just super solid.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Ethan Murray is that's what he is. I mean, that's just you want that veteran shortstop who started, you know, now as a third year guy, takes care of the ball and could go in the top 50 picks, and you know, catcher, shortstop, rock solid. Erickson Nichols at third base is kind of like that. He's just, you know, the only reason he's in the lineup is because he's a really, really good defender. Mm-hmm. Chase Cheek can really go get it. I mean, there's just, yeah, they're just, I think they're gonna be one of the best defensive teams in the country.
Yep. Fitzy, let's go back to you. Take us around the horn again here.
Yeah. So I'm sticking with bullpens here.
You are Mr. Bullpen today.
Mr. Bullpen. We're going to talk about the Gamecocks. Gamecocks got a 70 bullpen. And this is one that it's about depth. I mean, that's, it's just so many arms they can throw at you and velocity guys. And, you know, it starts with whoever doesn't wind up in the rotation. And you know, we expect it'll be Farr, Jordan, and Bosnick. And then I don't know who the fourth guy would be. Maybe Andrew Peters, maybe Magdy Okado, maybe Jackson Phipps, maybe Will Sanders. Like, you know, those last three guys are all talented freshmen, but at least two of those guys are going to wind up in the bullpen, two or three. And, you know, which is a really good place to start. Cotto, of course, premium prospect, power lefty up to 96, and Phipps, another big bodied lefty, you know, kind of 91, 93, three pitch mix. I mean, those guys really perform well in the fall. Peters, I think up to 96 in the fall. He's got a really quick arm. There's a lot of velocity. Jack Mahoney up to 96, kind of a cold weather kid that I think has a high ceiling, exciting former two, multi-sport guy, two-way talent. And then, you know, Travis Lensman, Sam Swigert, Kate Austin is another freshman that's kind of like flies under the radar, just a pitchability guy that actually, I think there's more velocity in there than I saw in the fall. It was 87, 89 in my look, and he just carved up for three innings, but he's got projection. And then CJ Wines, JUCO guy that was one of the top JUCO arms, kind of like Franco Alamon. Well, he was 92, 94, you know, up to 5, heavy life on it. For me, and I know Sife, so I'm pretty good at it. Was at Parkland, I think, JUCO last year.
Go Cobras.
Yeah. So, you know, and then on and on. Of course, you got Brett Carey. That's your anchor. I mean, that's, mm-hmm. I think, one of the more trustworthy closers out there. Just, you know, and it's not like that's not like the sexy stuff guy, but that's the stability guy that you need. You know, you need that guy that can go out there and give you comfortable innings. Daniel Lloyd, third year guy now. Big stuff, you know, up to 96. You hear a lot of that in this conversation. But, you know, I mean, John Gilreath and Brett Thomas and Parker Coyne, all these returning guys too. Cam Tringali, I mean, they all have stuff, man. They all have stuff. So it's just, you know, incredible depth, I think, in this bullpen. And that's what really stands out. But also, again, you do have the proven guy and Carey, that you can really kind of hang your hat on.
It's on in Columbia, boys. I think when I see an elite program like that, where they're trying to get back on top with what they're used to, there's, you know, there's a desperation in the program. And I mean that in a positive way. And the recruiting is very intense. And I think what happens in South Carolina is a perfect example of this. The roster gets very deep and very talented mm-hmm. in a pretty short amount of time. And then the next step is, you know, those kids just have to start believing that they are the South Carolina of yesteryear. But to me, that's the next step. But there's no denying that there's a ton of talent that's yeah. that they're putting together in that program. That's a really good recruiting staff. And it's a program that sells itself.
Well, when I look at South Carolina this year, guys, like for me, perception is reality. When you look at South Carolina, there's no doubt this is an important year for that program. This is an important year for that staff. And when I look at South Carolina going out there and scheduling a series at Texas right after they play Clemson, and then they go into SEC play, that tells you that Mark Kingston really, really likes his team, because I don't think he's going to Texas if he feels like, hey, this team might be going through some bumpy roads on the way to SEC play. He thinks his team's been pretty damn good, and I think that's pretty exciting.
Yep.
Kendall, I thought you were going to say he didn't schedule Texas just because he likes Buc-ee's and Whataburger, but you went a different direction.
And me, of course.
That's right.
I would never give myself that much credit.
I liked it. KR, you're up next. Who's your next? Oh, go ahead.
He knows you're never going to leave the Lone Star State, so if he wants to see you, he's got to come to you.
Hey, man, looking at the schedule this year, I may never leave. may never go outside the state border. At any rate, Miami's power. Yeah, I'll tell you what, Miami was a team that frankly, I was probably a little higher on than you guys were going into the season. I think this offense, and we're talking about the power here specifically, but I think this offense is going to be really good. I think when you look at Miami, just from a sheer power standpoint, Adrian Del Castillo, obviously we've talked about him enough. It's a broken record. Alex Terrell, he continues to show phenomenal power. You look up and down the lineup, Raymond Gill has big power. The Morales kid, the first-year player, they think he's a big-time defender. They think he's going to have immediate big-time power generation. Then you look at J.P. Gates, the designated hitter for those guys. He's another guy with big-time power. So when you look at Miami overall, this is a team that has five guys in the lineup that coaching staff feels can go up there and give them a power jolt. And there are not many offenses like that have five guys with that ability. So, I think as long as Miami's, pitching can kind of hold its own a little bit, and there's certainly question marks there, I think Miami's going to have a very good offense, and I cannot wait. Even though I'll be at Globe Life, I'm a little jealous that Aaron gets to see those five power hitters of Florida, or excuse me, Miami, against Florida's pitching staff and their bullpen opening weekend. That's such a Herculean matchup.
Gabe Rivera, too, is like an intriguing power source potentially. Even Tony Jenkins, I think, has some pop. He's kind of
wiry power, yeah.
Yeah, got to put it all together, but I mean, there's some bat speed there. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a lot of different guys that can hurt you in that lineup. I think it's certainly should be an elite offense. And yeah, I think we all really like Miami's offense. The only question is how will pitching come together having lost the whole rotation? And there's pieces to work with. That's what I'm – one of the things I'm really most excited to see is, how does Alex McFarland look? How does Jake Smith look? Rosario and, the newcomers that were the top-rated class in the country, how are they ready, right now? What's going to be asked of those guys on the mound?
Yeah, I mean, you can't go into Gainesville expecting to outslug somebody. Those are going to be games that are going to be 6-3, 5-2, things like that.
Got to love it. Hey, let me take us out to the West Coast, gentlemen. I'm going to do the UC Santa Barbara rotation. What's exciting about this group is they're all back. I think that's part one that you have to focus on. Rodney Boone has been, he's been in the rotation since day one. He's one of those lefties with a invisible fastball. He had over a 13 K per nine last year in his, shortened sophomore season. Zach Tor was the JC lefty that came in that was a nice piece who all of a sudden blossomed into a monster. Same thing, saw his velocity tick up. And he, like Boone, is a lefty that pitches with his fastball. Zach Tora had 39 punch outs in 25 innings last year. So, just those two pieces returning. Zach Tora is another guy in a normal draft. He's not coming back. But, the real big jump for Santa Barbara is Michael McGreevy. He was the closer his freshman year, was excellent. Was excellent as a starter last year, had an under, a 0.99 ERA. And now the reports are that Michael McGreevy, who is a 6'4 right-hander who's athletic, he just was a sinker slider guy in the past, Now he's touching 96 in the fall. He's had a big velocity jump. So, you know, you start looking at that rotation, you've got two lefties that can miss your bat with their fastball. These are not trick'em lefties. These are not change-up lefties. These are fastballs that you can't get to. And then you throw McGreevy in on Sundays, you know, pitching his way into a very high draft position. And this group's going to be really difficult to square up in a weekend series. They got plenty going on in their bullpen too, but this rotation is really loud for me.
Yeah. And like a lot of the best Big West pitchers over the years, Boone also has a plus changeup. And, mm-hmm. you know, Tora, I think Tora's got two kind of 55 secondary pitches with the breaking ball, the changeup. So, you know, like you said, they can really beat you with their fastball, but they also have other stuff to help, you know, keep guys off that pitch. So, yeah, I mean, it's a really fun group. No question about it.
Fitzy, are we back to you? Yeah, I hit third, right? Yeah, back to you, Fitzy.
Yeah. So wrapping up the bullpens that received 70 grades, I'm going to go to West Virginia now. And this is one that, you know, full disclosure, when we ranked this team 14th in the country, we were expecting Ryan Berger and Jackson Wolf to be the 1-2 punch in the rotation. And it now sounds like Randy Mazey has announced Berger will miss the whole season. Do I have that right, Runes?
Correct. Yeah. Had surgery in December, it sounds like.
Disappointing. Disappointing for the Mountaineers. Now, I still like their team. I mean, I still feel like they have so much depth on the mound that they'll be fine. And this is another one of those that I think they had 10 guys in the fall throw 95 or better. So, I mean, they still have a lot of velocity, even without Berger. But, you know, and that's what really shines in this bullpen. You know, the day I was there, and it was like a 40-degree drizzly Sunday morning, like, you know, 10 o'clock scrimmage. And Madison Jeffries out there pumping, you know, 94, 96, you know, wipeout slider, 85, 86. Jacob Waters, he comes in there, 93, 96, you know, hammer curveball up to 87. He's also got a little slider, curveball 82, slider 87. I mean, we're talking about power breaking balls here. Zach Ottinger, same thing. I mean, he was 91, 93, but I saw two legitimate outpitch breaking balls with a cutter, kind of mid-80s cutter, and a slider, a little bit more depth to it. I mean, you know, there's a lot of swing and miss pitches here. And then Daniel Odenkirk's kind of the wild card guy, just a monster, you know, 6'9", 250. I mean, he's a beast coming back off surgery. Didn't get a chance to pitch last year. He was almost ready, but hadn't made his debut and the season was canceled. But I mean, he was up 97 this fall, you know, with a changeup and a slider that both can miss bats. So, I mean, if that guy is, I don't know what role he pitches. Maybe he now gets his chance to pitch in the rotation without Berger, because you've still got Jake Carr and Tyler Stretchy, who are kind of your pitchability guys. And those in Carr in particular, I think, I can't imagine him not being in the rotation, just a lefty with three pitches that pounds the zone. So they have those two guys. Maybe Odenkirk moves into the rotation, but in which case, you know, that's one less bullet in your bullpen. I don't know. We'll see how that plays out. But anyway, I mean, you know, they also have guys from the left side, Ben Hampton and Adam Tulloch, two newcomers that have quality stuff. I mean, Tulloch's up 95 this fall from the left side. And then, you know, like a Skyler Gonzalez. I mean, he's just like, you know, 88, 90 fastball guy, but it's like a legitimate, at least plus changeup, like a really, really good changeup. So, you know, that's another weapon, another swing and miss offering. I look for those, like particular pitches that are 60s sure. in a bullpen, and West Virginia has a lot of them.
It'll be very interesting to me, Aaron, to see if Tyler Chadwick moves into the rotation with Burgert out. You know, he's another pretty option cool. that they're very high on, and he's kind of working his way back. But, you know, I'll be very curious to see if they move in the rotation.
Yeah, and that's, you know, probably the biggest recruit they've ever had there. You know, I mean, that guy had the season gone on. I don't think he gets to campus. I mean, he's a Wisconsin kid who, you know, didn't really get a chance to pitch in front of scouts before the season was canceled. And they're lucky about that. Because he would have, you know, he could have gone really good. He could have been top two rounds pick. So you're right. Yeah, maybe that's the guy that steps in the rotation. So I'm actually not that worried about West Virginia, even without Berger. I mean, I would downgrade them from where we ranked them because I think Berger's really good. But, I mean, they're probably still a top 25 team even without him because of all the depth they have.
You know, the challenge is that league is so difficult. You know, yeah. It's these little edges start to wear on you. But I agree. I'm kind of two minds here. I still really like West Virginia as a program and as a team. But you know, seriously, I love Burger. So that hurts because I really am all in on that kid.
Yeah, you mentioned the depth of the Big 12, Runes. You know, the little things matter. Well, you kind of wonder if losing Burger, it kind of evens out with Oklahoma losing Cade Horton, who's going to be in their weaker rotation to start the year, and probably hit fourth or fifth in their lineup. That might kind of even those two things out.
That sounds like a special dude. Like, just heartbroken to not get to see Cade Horton play this year based on what we've heard about him.
Really brutal. I mean, you're talking 96, 98 on the mound and, like, plus power. That hurts. That hurts. And I don't think the injuries – I don't think the injuries are done in the Big 12 from what I'm hearing. I'm hearing there's at least one more weekend starter who's out for a pretty good team in this league. So we'll see what happens.
Well, tell Martha to slow down on the injuries, for God's sake.
I know, Kendall, man. That's the one thing I don't like Martha getting out of control on, is those injuries. I hate seeing that. And unfortunately, I mean, I think we're going to see more and more of them. You know, we always see the little injuries early in the year, but I think we're going to see more this year. You just had so many kids who, you know, were relying on at-home training. And, like, yeah, there might be kids that are near some big facilities and things like that, but there are also a lot of kids who didn't have those kind of resources for 5 or 6 months. And I think it's at some point it's going to take its toll. Well, on the flip side, I do think we're going to see some big velos early on. So I'm hoping we see big velos and less injuries, but I'm not so sure that's going to happen.
Yeah, because usually the inverse is what happens. Correct. But yeah, we'll keep our fingers crossed. KR, who you got next for us?
Well, you know, we've already talked so much about Florida's power in their offense. I don't think people want to hear about Florida anymore. I'm going to go with Vandy's rotation. They were a 70. I don't think we have to break down Kumar very much. I think people already kind of know what to expect of Kumar. I think when you look at Jack Leiter, I think we're all a believer in the stuff. But, you know, he has to go out there and prove it. This is a guy who has not pitched against SEC competition. You know, I had a scout tell me a couple weeks ago, you know, we were talking about Leiter, and he's like, hey, Leiter's stuff's amazing. But what if his name was Jack Wilson and not Jack Leiter? Like, would you still have the same, you know, he asked me, would you still hold him as much esteem? And I think I would. Like, I think his stuff is that good. I'm just curious to see, you know, how he does. The only thing I'm worried about with Kumar, guys, and I don't know if it's really like I'm worried about it, but, I mean, when you look at how well he finished his last year, if you look at early on last year, he was good. He wasn't great. And I think when you look at Kumar, like we all and scouts and everyone else kind of hold Kumar up to this bar that like no one else is at right now. Right. Like we think Kumar is incredible and he is, you know, you just kind of wonder like, you know, just mentally as he goes on throughout the season, like just trying to meet that expectation. You know, I don't think mentally he's that kind of person. But like, it's just really hard when people pretty much expect perfection out of you every week. And so I'm just kind of curious to see how he handles that, for me at least. Looking at the rest of the rotation, you know, Ethan Smith is obviously a very accomplished starting pitcher. The guy I would say to keep an eye on, though, is Thomas Schultz. I was talking to a scout the other day who said he's been very, very good so far this spring. So it would not shock me if you saw like a Thomas Schultz starting next weekend instead of Ethan Smith, but that's to be determined.
That's interesting because I think Smith, his stuff, I think really plays up in the bullpen more.
Yeah.
Certainly, you know, not a lot of guys are like that. No knock on Smith, but if you had him as a bullpen weapon, potentially, if Schultz could be that starter, boy, I mean, that I think that makes Vandy look even more interesting. But yeah. As it is, I mean, if we kind of expected Smith to be the Sunday guy when we did this grade, and even, you know, if that's the case, boy, you feel pretty good about that trio right there. But that Schultz thing is an interesting X factor.
No doubt. I mean, do you guys think I'm overthinking the Kumar thing? I mean, I don't know. Like, I always worry about kids whenever everybody just expects him to be just unbelievable. Like, that's just a really hard and almost impossible bar to live up to.
I think, KR, that I think, you know, that old expression I keep using, like, two things can be true at the same time. Like, I think I am worried, like, if I'm super nitpicky, I think I've said this on the podcast before, what does it look like when Kumar does not have that alien slider? You know, like, let's say there's a day where he just cannot find that pitch. Now, we haven't seen very many days like that. You know, like his first start of his career against TCU was kind of a day like that. It didn't go well. You know, he's also a true freshman in his first start. Yeah. But I think, you know, does his fastball, does he command it well enough? Does his fastball miss bats that often? You know, I think, but I think those are legitimate question marks. I also have tremendous confidence in that kid, Kumar Rocker, to answer those questions. I think he's a mature kid. He's a competitor. I think he just keeps growing in confidence. And I think he will be able to answer those question marks. But I think it's a very fair criticism that when you catch him on a day without his great slider, now we're going to see.
He doesn't, you know, he really doesn't beat people with his fast. He hasn't anyway to this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, Runes, I remember we talked about this, I think, on the podcast before. So sorry to repeat ourselves, but you call the perfect game. I mean, the no hitter, the 19 strikeout game, mm-hmm. right? If I'm not mistaken, all 19 of the strikeouts were on the slider.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was 45 swing and miss, and easily 42 of them were on sliders that day.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that because Rob Friedman actually retweeted that out yesterday. And I went back and watched it. Just unbelievable that same slider over and over and over, and they cannot touch it.
But yeah, well, then I mean, it becomes mental. You could see the Duke hitters by the second half of that game. They're literally swinging when Kumar's arm moved forward. You know, just like that slider has you spooked out of your mind. You can't see it. You can't get your bat to it. And you know, again, we're saying his fastball, people get to it, but it is 95. Like, it's not 85.
Now, and he's not the first guy, of course, that's entered a season with a ridiculous amount of hype as the prohibitive preseason Golden Spikes Award favorite, right? And, you know, we've got so many examples of guys handling that and winning it anyway. I mean, Adley Rutschman and, you know, Chris Bryant and, you know, Steven Strasburg, you know, David Price. Now, it's one thing for a hitter, Anthony Rendon. I mean, there's, you know, guys being pitched around constantly. You just take your walks. And, like, that's a challenge, you know, in itself, but also that can really help, you know, boost your stats, all those walks. But for a pitcher, I mean, the one thing is Strasburg, you know, he had so many different weapons, right? Like the day, it's not like he was just relying on the breaking ball or, you know, he had a really good changeup. He also had a really good fastball that he commanded exceptionally well for a college pitcher. You know, Price, I mean, same deal. Is like, yes, he had a really good slider, but I mean, that fastball really played. So I think that's a valid point is, you know, can you be I don't want to call him a one-trick pony, but I mean, like, can he prove that he's more than a one-trick pony? I mean, I do think that's a legitimate question mark.
No question. So, hey, let's do this, guys. So I've got the last position group. I got Wake Forest Power, but let's save our Omaha hunches for next week. Let's save that one. I have a little thing I want to share on one of the conference previews I'm doing after this, but let's do Wake Forest Power. You know, I think that's something that's just, they play in a great ballpark for hitting for power. It's something Tom Walter and his staff have done an incredible job recruiting to. You know, this is a big, physical, old team. And, you know, I looked back at their 2019 stats, and a lot of these kids are still there. You know, Bobby Seymour, who we don't think of as a true blue power hitter, I mean, the guy had 20 doubles and 9 home runs to go with those 92 RBIs a couple of years ago. And we hear that he's lofting the ball even better this year. Chris Lanzilli, 16 bombs that year, 19 doubles. Shane Muntz, 14 bombs that year. Brendan Tinsman, 10 bombs that year. So I think it's kind of, it's part of who they are. You know, it's the fabric of the program. They're big, they're physical. It's a park that plays to it. But I think more than anything, this is a team that has been through a lot. You know, they've had high expectations and failed. They've kind of had some draftitis. I think that's one of the things I do really like about Wake Forest this year is that they kind of have fallen on their face. And so, you know, that and the chip that Fitzy put in my neck, the Wake Forest chip that Kendall keeps rejecting, and I'm in. Let's go. Wake Forest Power.
Yeah, and you add Brock Wilkin to that mix, you know, one of the premier freshman bats in the country, another big-bodied guy that has a pretty mature approach for a young guy and also has real power. So that's another upgrade there. You know, they've got guys off the bench like Adam Cesare, who, you know, you look at him, he's 6'5", he's chiseled. I mean, there's real power there. They can play some lefty-righty matchups. Drew Kendall coming off the bench, more left-handed power. I mean, 6'4", 220, big bodies on this team. It's really, really physical club.
I love it. Kendall, there you go. There's your Wake Forest fix for the week.
And I feel like it's like a requirement in our pod every week to pump up Wake Forest.
Go Deeks!
Well, I don't think we did last week, so we were due. It's been 2 weeks.
Hey, before we wrap up, gentlemen, so as you guys know, I have gotten to do some cool conference previews. I got to do the Pac-12, which was a blast, got to do the Summit League, got to do the, and use the word coup in that report, which was fun. I have worked on the NEC, worked on the MAC, and so the, or am working on the MAC. So one of the things, the MAC, that's two A's in MAC, they're, so you guys know I'm big on hashtags, their league hashtag is Mac Sports. I mean, come on, league office, like that, we got to do better. So I did a Twitter poll and I had some ideas out there. I even got Rob Bass, the rapper, involved, but the one that won was get ready for the smack down with the two A's in there. So we got that, but now I'm doing the NA, or, you know, I just got done the NEC, and their league office deserves tremendous kudos, because I really wasn't sure what to do for a league hashtag there. What the NEC has done, that's the Northeast Conference, by the way, they have gone all caps, and their hashtag is all in, ball out.
Ooh.
I like it. I mean,
I feel like they hired St. Peter's a social media manager.
Well, the Peacocks do have an all-time
hashtag
great.
Strutting your stuff.
Yep, I like it. So there you go, gentlemen. There's your conference preview.
What's the scoop on the Peacocks this year, Runes?
I haven't written them up yet. But just think they're going to be strutting their stuff. Like that's the thing we know will happen.
Banner year, I'm calling it. Peacocks.
I think this is the year that Stitch makes it to a St. Peter's game.
Jersey City.
I hope so.
I like it. Gentlemen, always a pleasure. Highlight of my week.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Driveline Baseball, for sponsoring. Thank you, listeners. We'll be back again next week with more college baseball talk. Look forward to that. Until then, so long, everybody.